Hey, so I got to tell you, I'm Terry, anorexic, bulimic, compulsive eater. This is the first time, I want to say, in probably, I remember early in my service work days where I would take notes and have them on my lap. I have a little note. I have no idea if I'll refer to it or not, but I did usually spend some time reflecting, of course, right, about my life, my journey of recovery. I never know when I'm going to be asked to share again. I just know that when I am asked to share, that usually something's going on in my life that I have to be honest about. Oftentimes I'll say, oh God, are you kidding me? No, not now. Why can't you call on me when things are just going peachy keen, right? Anyway, that just hasn't been my experience, right? So I like the thank you to everybody that invited me, the people that took part in making this deal happen. That kind of service work is amazing. It's not something I do much of anymore, although my life has become about service in recovery. So I really like the revive, renew, and recover piece, the theme of that. I looked up in the dictionary, simple, basic description of these three words. So revive was restore to life, renew, begin again, and recover, return to a normal state of health, mind, body. And I have strength there, so that's the strength that that I have come to trust in these 12 steps, which I didn't learn about through the ABA process until I was well into my recovery. So, born into a family, had an older brother, 3 years older than myself. My mother and my father were, I can say today, pretty interesting people. My mother started drinking at 16. My mother, I think, prior to drinking, was using food as a way to escape her emotions. My dad was a classic caretaker, tried to control my mom. Didn't work very good. So early in my life, my parents moved myself and my brother from Quebec to Alberta in an attempt to control what was going on in the family home. And of course, I didn't know that. I was 4 years old, right? Like, I have no idea. I have no idea until I start discovering my own story. So my mother, chronic alcoholic. As my mother was raising me up, she was a great dieter. So I was drinking skim milk at 7 years old and hating it. So that's been a part of the landscape for me as far back as I can remember, right? I don't remember as a little girl feeling uncomfortable in my body. I just knew I was uncomfortable with my emotions, right? Like, if I came to your house on the way to school, I'd already had breakfast. You asked me if I'm hungry, I'd say yes. Did you eat? No. I'd lie. I started lying really early. And I'd eat at your house, and then, you know, I'd trade food at lunch. All kinds of crazy stuff about food was part of the landscape for me, as far back as I can remember. By the time I hit my adolescence, I was pleasantly plump, is what they would describe me. My surname was Campbell, so a lot of kids were teasing me about elephant soup, you know. So teasing was part of what was happening in my life. And I think about swimming. I think about going to the lake. I learned to swim in Sylvan Lake and Gull Lake. I would have my bathing suit on and I'd have my shirt on and I didn't want to take my pants off, and in I'd go into the water, right? Like, it was uncomfortable. I didn't like my body. And so as my body started to change, that even got worse, right? So when I had my first drink at 11, and the drink just made everything better, right? I picked up my first cigarette at the same time, and I have to say, I don't see, in looking back on my story again, that ever did I drink like a normal person. I didn't smoke like a normal person. By the time I quit smoking, I was smoking a pack and a half a day. And by the time I put down the drink, I was drinking daily. And I loved what it felt like when I put that alcohol in my system, because it took away the uncomfortableness of all the other stuff for me somehow. And then I'd have to wake up and start again. Anyhow, so that being said, my parents divorced when I was in my teens. My mother and father separated. My mother and I lived together for a piece of time and drank together. Drank and ate and picked up respective playmates. And so, you know, the illness, the ism, manifested in many ways for me. I finally left my mother for dead. I didn't care. You know what? I was done. I mean, I was done with thinking that I could control her stuff. I couldn't see mine. I went to party in a small town about 3 hours away from my hometown, and I met the fellow that would become my husband. And he smiled at me. Poor bugger. Anybody in that bar could have smiled at me. And I'd have gone home with him, right? It just happened to be the man that would become the father of my two kids. And we were together for about 7 years. And by the time I left that marriage, I was up to my armpits in my eating disorder. My mother sobered up shortly after I left home. She didn't have anybody to look after her anymore. And you know, she went to a bar one night and met some guy, and it turned out he was a recovering alcoholic. So my mother would go to the meetings with him, and then they would go out and play. And so my mother started hanging out in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and eventually she had a moment, and she realized that she belonged there. And so then my mother, from that day forward till the day she took her last breath, did not pick up another drink. And she went to AA meetings. She, every day, I mean, every day, roundups, retreats, every single day. She devoted her life to recovery work. So she was the first big book I saw. She invited me when I go home to visit. Crazy, 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 right? Crazy, crazy. I'd go home to visit, and she'd invite me to an AA meeting, and I'd go. I think this is good for you guys, but I don't. Oh, you don't want me to play with that. Mm-hmm. Okay. It'll go tick, tick, tick. Am I allowed to have a drink? Okay. There we go. Anyway, where was I? So she got sober. I would go to these open meetings with her, and I think this is a great place for you guys, right? And I realized that maybe I needed to try some Al-Anon meetings. So, you know, I know I'm not to be talking, but this is my story, folks. These meetings are part of the landscape for me. I end up in Al-Anon. I couldn't see myself in that story. I couldn't see myself there, right? And I was pregnant with my second child, weighing less than I had ever weighed in my life, I think, because I was so sick with morning sickness, always vomiting daily through my pregnancies, eating, vomiting, eating, vomiting. So 9 months pregnant, I'm less than I started. 20 days before my son was born, my brother took his own life, and he was one of us. You know, he had an addiction. He also was bipolar. And he also had issues around his sexuality, which one of his last conversations with my mom was that he would rather die than be gay. And so within 3 months, he was not here anymore. And so at that point in time, I made a decision. I remember the day my husband sat me down on that couch and said, you know what, Rick died of his own hand. I thought, oh my God, I can never pick up a drink again. If I pick up a drink, I'm hooped. I will die of the same illness that my family has. And so I haven't picked up a drink. And my son now is in his 40s. He's 40. How does that happen? Anyway, and I didn't get a program. I had a friend, a good friend of mine actually, who's still a good friend of mine today. She came to visit me in our home, and she looked at me and she said, you know what, you look like a fat old lady. And I thought, oh, you think I'm fat, right? And I had this idea that if I binged and purged, I could lose weight, I could have the food, I don't have to let go of anything. And so it just made so much sense to me to do that. So I started doing that. I lost a lot of weight very quickly. I got a hit like I'd never had from compulsive eating, ever. Because when I was compulsively eating and overweight, I was pretty darn slothful, right? So I was getting all kinds of attention with the changes in my body. I had this energy that I'd never felt in my life before. And I started exercising. Of course, right? Like it just was such a natural thing. And then if you wanted to spend time with me, you had to come and exercise with me, right? And my kids, I would take them to the local track, bring their toys, and they could play in the sand pit. I didn't go to the playground with my kids. I went to the track with my kids. And I was dying of untreated addiction, and I had no idea of how to do anything different. My husband came to me and said, you know what, I don't know what's going on with all the money. He had a good job, but the money was gone. I mean, I was eating this out of house and home. I looked after the basics because, I have to keep the money coming in. And so the day he asked for control of the money back, I made a decision to leave the marriage. And within 2 weeks, I was gone. I left, packed up our kids, and I moved to Edmonton. I was living in Lloydminster, and I moved to Edmonton. And I then got married to the government because I was unemployable. By this time, I could not stop binging and purging. I was compulsively exercising and taking laxatives. Feeding my kids the basics. They got the basics, the bare bones basics, but they didn't have a parent that knew how to love. And I couldn't surrender them to their dad, because if I did, I wouldn't have a paycheck, right? So, but for the grace of God, I had a moment of clarity around my own alcoholism, identified and started to talk about the fact that this was what I was doing. And I wasn't drinking, but I was dying of untreated addiction. And I realized that my alcoholism and my eating disorder were this. There's no separation for me. I mean, my isms are just a symptom of my spiritual malady. And so my process of getting sober hasn't been, you know, we talked about relapse earlier. Like, I relapsed plenty in my thinking and physically early in my recovery with my alcoholism, but I never picked up a drink. I didn't get sober in my eating for quite some time, right? 2 years sober, I was seeing a counselor, and she didn't know what to do with me. I couldn't stop. I said, I'm not going to do this again. The next day, I was at it again. I knew that if I didn't get help, my kids were going to be taken away from me, and rightly so. They were still very little. So they sent me off to Henwood, which is a treatment center for people with, you know, alcoholic and drug abuse, but they didn't know what to do with someone like myself. It was either that or sending me off to the local mental hospital, and I'm so grateful that I had that experience of going through and having more 12-step stuff, because in those days there was more 12-step marriage with treatment than there is today. And so I came out of that experience with a willingness to work with a sponsor that I hadn't had before, and a willingness to do the steps. I haven't binged and purged since that point in time. But then my disease just switched to restricting and compulsively exercising, right? So I did that until I was 7 years sober in AA, and I was then diagnosed with insulin-dependent diabetes. My organs were shutting down. I had lost all of my teeth. The gig was up, right? The gig was up. I had nowhere else to go except my knees. And but for the grace of God, since that time, I have been able to one day at a time, just one day at a time, surrender, okay? So I have a physician who understands addiction. I had to work with a dietitian. Those people are still part of my toolbox today. My doctor still, I've moved around, been in different provinces in Canada over the years, but, you know, I get a doctor, I let them know. I haven't been on a scale since I got sober. My weight is not my business. Not my business. So my kids were raised without a scale, which I think is fantastic. I have three adult females, my daughter and my two granddaughters, that are beautiful women who are more at home in their bodies than I ever was. And I have two young grandsons that are growing up in a family that's still pretty wacky family. However, they have a nana that they get to see continue to do the work on herself. Someone that, I live with my daughter and her family, and recently was on my knees saying my prayers, and my grandsons saw me doing that. I said, okay, Nana, what are you doing? Right? So we get to have conversation about those things. They know that I go to meetings, AA, ABA, whatever, 12-step meeting, it doesn't matter to me. I wouldn't be sober here now if the rooms had read a blue card to me. I would have walked out and died of this disease. So when I'm at an AA meeting and I share my story, I'll talk about my eating disorder. I've met lots and lots of people, men and women both, over the years that have come to me afterwards and said, oh, I really related to that, right? That's how I've been able to stay sober, is to continue to do that kind of work. Can I tell a story? The first day I met Dawn, well, okay. Yeah. I won't tell it all because I don't know how much I can tell. but we belong to the same Friday night group. And part of my story is at 10 years sober in, I was maybe 3 years sober in my eating disorder, I fell in love with a woman. And I thought, oh my God, are you kidding me? My brother was gay. I am not gay. You know, not gay, right? Well, guess what? I fell in love with a woman. I had never been able to look at that until I was 10 years sober in AA. Anyway, so I first met Dawn. We were at a home group together, and she pulled me aside afterwards, and she had bread in her, she had bread in the back of her car. So she was out offering me food, which is hilarious, because here we are, right? Years later, is it a surprise? Absolutely not. I mean, you know, disordered eating is one of the really common most well-hidden addictions of our day, right? So, what else am I going to share here? I have, you know, God has tricked me into many things in recovery. One of the things I've been open to is saying yes rather than no, because my disease would have me say no to anything that comes my way, including coming here this weekend and sharing my story. And so I got to go 2 years sober to Henwood, which was a great treatment experience for me. When I was 5 years sober, my mother was training at Hazelden as a chaplain. And I got to go on the bus to visit her at Christmas. So I'm going to Hazelden to meet with all these. By this time, I'm in recovery for 5 years. I think I'm pretty good. And and I get there, and I end up in family program. So my whole Christmas holidays were in family, right? And I could have said no, but I said yes. And I came out of that experience open to looking at more of my family stuff, if you like, right? And so along the way, my recovery journey has had an Al-Anon slant as well, right? It's been an important part of my healing. My mother, as I shared with you, my mother, we lived together at one point, and I had all these people coming to the house. We were having meetings at my house, and she'd have to sit in with all these people with disordered eating, and I don't, you know. My mom never got sober in her eating disorder, but she was certainly a great example in the community where she served and worked with a lot of recovering women. And continued to be an example for me. When she was 25 years sober, she moved to Florida and said to me, she said, I'm working with a sponsor like I've never worked with a sponsor before. And I said, oh, come on. Like, come on. You've been working with sponsors forever. You've done the steps how many times? You know, all of, and she said, yeah, but I'm having a different experience with this woman. And so I want to say at this point in my recovery, the work that I'm doing with my current sponsor is something like I've not ever done before, which is really cool. And I've had numerous sponsors over the years, and all of them have been really, really super, super important to the woman that I've become today. And I'm so grateful for each one of them. Yeah. So my current sponsor, I met when I first met ABA. Okay? So... So I met ABA. I had a friend who, again, like I say, was involved in ABA. She really liked the program. I said, oh, God, I can't do another program. I'm so tired of all these different programs. And so I wasn't very willing, right? I wasn't very willing. I said, that's great. I'm glad we'd have coffee. She'd share with me her experience. It was fantastic. But I wasn't open to coming to an ABA meeting. And then God tricked me into an ABA meeting, and I landed here, and I loved it here, and I love it here. The recipe that I found here in the book, if you like, in the way it's written and presented, made sense to me. Other places that I had visited, I had a hard time with. And I didn't with this. So I was really glad that I got tricked in. And because I don't believe, I believe my recovery is about freedom from the obsession of, on a daily basis, my body shape and size. And it's not about the food. There's not good and bad foods. And so my experience in ABA has been that there were more shifts, right? There was more shifts and more opening and more freedom in me than I had experienced before. So I think God has a great sense of humor, and even with my resistance, continues to open me up, crack me open. As recent as yesterday, I was on my knees surrendering an area of my life that... 5 years before my mother died, she said, you know what? If you don't surrender this piece, you will die of untreated addiction and never pick up a drink. or compulsively eat, or, right? And I heard her. And I asked my sponsor then if she would walk through the steps in relationship to that part of my life. And that's around the relationship stuff, right? Not my relationships with my kids or the people that I love, but another piece that needed to be surrendered at a deeper level. And I came out of that series of steps in a different place. And I get opportunities to practice every day. And, yeah, so I'm glad to be sober between my ears. Like, my disease lives here, right? It's my ego, my thinking has to be surrendered. So I'm 62. I showed up here. I was 24 years old when I got here. I'm 62, and I have more freedom and joy and love in my life than I would ever have ever even imagined could be possible. And I have relationships with my kids that aren't always easy, and my grandkids that aren't always easy, but they're honest and real, and I don't sweep things under the carpet, and I don't have to use over them, but I do have to pick up the phone every day. I have to ask for help every day. I have to invite God in. So yesterday was the first sober day in this area of my life, okay? First sober day. I go to work yesterday morning, and my work has been about service since I got into the rooms. And my first client of the day, before she left, she said, "I will pray for you." And I said, "Thank you." And at the end of the day, I thought I'd call her and say, "Thank you for praying for me." Because I'd had a great day, right? And she's not a program person, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And so as I'm leaving the building, guess who's there? And I got to thank her, right? So God continues to surprise me in helping me to deal with things as they unfold one day at a time. So thank you for asking me to share. My relationship with God is right here in this room with you gals, And, you know, again, yeah, I mean, I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous not liking women, thank you very much. I had a lot of work to do, a lot of work. So for me to actually have an intimate love relationship with a woman at 10 years old, oh, it was phenomenal, believe me, right? Yeah, so thank you for being the women in my life. Done. Thank you.